Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by Sean O'Connell, the author of the new upcoming book, Release the Snyder Cut. And of course, it's timed with this Thursday's HBO Max release of the Snyder Cut of Justice League at long last. Hey, Sean, thanks so much for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Now, I know you've seen it 3 going on 4 times, so there's a lot to talk about. But I'm gonna try to tackle this chronologically if you can. So let's sort of, before we get to what you've been devouring for the last couple of days, let's sort of back up and move chronologically. So Justice League was Snyder's third superhero flick. He did Man of Steel and then Batman vs Superman, where Superman died at the end. But explain sort of where Justice League, how the original thing went, how Snyder was replaced by Whedon and that whole mess.
Sure, because people who are looking at this might say to themselves, like, wait, I've seen this movie already. And in a way, you a little bit have, but not really, because back in 2017, Zack Snyder had a Justice League movie that was supposed to be a sequel to his Batman versus Superman film. And it was going to continue to add DC characters. We were going to get full introductions to The Flash and Aquaman and Cyborg. And they were going to join Wonder Woman and Batman in a team film that was being put together by Zack Snyder. But the director had to leave the production due to a family tragedy. He and his wife, Debbie, lost one of their daughters to suicide. And he had to step away from the production. So Warner Brothers at the time used that as an opportunity to sort of shift gears on the franchise and go from this kind of more dark and serious tone that Snyder took with the DC movies and shift towards a more lighter, audience-friendly, humorous sort of mode that Marvel was doing. And they hired Joss Whedon, the guy who directed 2 Avengers films, to do that. But what happened was it was such a drastic difference in voices and tone that the movie that ended up landing in theaters wasn't the movie that fans were anticipating. And so it kind of bombed all around. And Snyder's most passionate fans believed that their original director had a version of the movie that he was sitting on. And so they fought for 3 years to get his true version of the movie released.
Yeah, it's such a great point. And I love what you said about how it's by trying to please everybody, but like taking a DC vehicle but then Marvelizing it sort of failed all around. You can't, instead of just picking one path and pleasing one or the other, it sort of failed all around. But to your point, there the seeds of something great were there, it just never got realized. So explain how the Twitter hashtag took off and what was your role in that?
Yeah, so like literally the first day that the Justice League theatrical movie started to screen, Zack's fans knew because they'd seen trailers, they'd watched, sort of making of clips leading up to the release of it. They knew that this wasn't his movie. You could tell the difference in the footage. You could tell how badly it was altered. And they went on social media starting that night, November 17th, 2017. They came back from the theaters and they got on social media and said, "This isn't Zack's movie. What the heck happened? Let's start to piece together what went wrong." And one of the fans, just sort of casually, kind of jokingly, dropped the hashtag "Release the Snyder Cut." And what became really funny about that is that, without them even realizing it, they gave themselves one of the best marketing slogans that I've seen, in all my years of covering the entertainment industry, because it's become part of the lexicon. Release the fill in the blank is sort of the joke or punchline when you want to see something that's been forbidden. But they rallied behind this notion that Zack Snyder had a cut, and they used it to raise awareness for the existence of this cut, even though they were told repeatedly by multiple people in the industry, like, no, it doesn't exist. No, there's no way that he has enough footage put together to make a movie. But the fans had Zack Snyder on their side. He would routinely sort of come in and move the movement along and sort of coax them and say, using his own social media, say, "Yes, I do have a version. And look," he goes, "I've never seen the theatrical cut. I think it's better," and his fans believed in him. And so it was kind of a remarkable story about how fans just persistently lobbied for a version of a movie that they wanted to see and used social media to their advantage with this crazy hashtag in order to have their voices heard by a studio and have a major Hollywood studio reverse course and give them the version that they that they didn't want to release in the first place.
Oh yeah, it's such a fascinating, the whole, it's a fascinating, almost like an insurrection reverse engineering in a way that's just fascinating to me, because, you know, we've seen, quote, director's cuts of, you know, Coppola will be doing an Apocalypse Now redux, or I always think of Ridley Scott Blade Runner as the first one when you talk director's cuts. But that's, you know, that's more or less the same movie, you know, just expanded with deleted scenes, and it's the same filmmaker, and, you know, it's an extension of what we already saw. This is like a whole new beast where it's, you know, almost going back, reverting to an original director and concepts that, you know what I mean? It's like the fans and the original director won over the studio in this case. And that's just fascinating to me. So before we get into the actual, you know, what you've been watching, the 4-hour cut, talk to that insurrection concept, and speak to why Devil's Advocate, you know, why do some people are nervous about that? You know, is that giving fans too much power? Or I assume on your side of the opinion is that it's healthy because this was what he originally intended.
Well, I do understand both sides of it. And, you know, I don't think that they're setting any kind of precedent, because I really think the situation surrounding this version and this fan base is so unique that you would need so many things to kind of line up for it to ever happen again. Like, you would need a director to sort of walk away from a massive project. You would need him to actually have the stuff to offer in a revised version of the film. Like, Ridley Scott has all those cuts of Blade Runner, so you can do that. But, like, you know, Star Wars fans who want to see the Phil Lord and Chris Miller version of Solo, like, that's never going to happen. And they'll be the first ones to tell you that they don't have a version of it.
Right.
But the one thing that really swung the Snyder Cut fight, you know, what went in their favor was the fact that we now have these streaming services that didn't exist years ago.
True.
And it's easier for you to put a 4-hour version of a director's cut onto a streaming service and not have to worry about, like, the logistics of trying to get this into a movie theater would make it almost impossible nowadays. And this is even before COVID has completely messed with the distribution system of major films. Like, you couldn't get a 4-hour cut of Justice League into a theater. So, you know, HBO Max is able to say to him, sure, throw everything in, you know, give us the kitchen sink version, because your fans want to see it. Doesn't cost us anything to put it up there. They can stream it as often as they want to. And we're in a different spot than we were back in 2017 with trying to negotiate how to put these things out. And I even think going forward, if Zach is able to continue his vision and maybe tell more stories in this universe, the best place for him to do it is on HBO Max, because of the freedom that comes with streaming services and his ability to do, you know, maybe a 5-part mini series where each thing is, you know, an hour long. This is the way that we're kind of exploring the industry going forward. And you know, I think some people are a little bit worried about how it's shifting things away from the theatrical model and maybe giving really creative filmmakers, like Martin Scorsese, he has to do The Irishman on Netflix now because he can't get that into a theater. Zack Snyder has to put the Snyder Cut on HBO Max because it's impossible to put it in a theater. But I think for creators, that's really exciting. It's giving them a lot of freedom to paint with the brushes that they want to, and not be limited by that 2-hour, 2.5-hour, you know, theatrical window that's mandated by putting something into a multiplex.
Right. It's sort of that carte blanche dream that they tried all the way back to Orson Welles, The Fight Began. You know what I mean? Like, it's there's been a confluence of events with just technology streaming. And to your point, you know, coincidentally, serendipitously, COVID has actually helped foment a space for something like the Snyder Cut. And to your point, it's allowing the filmmakers to have a little more power than the studios in a way. So it's just a fascinating subject. And like you said, I get both sides, but I'm fascinated by this as a case study in how it could actually work. Awesome. All right. Well, without further ado, let's get to the actual kitchen sink you mentioned, the 4-hour release. You've binged it 3 times. I think you're going on 4 at this point. How is it structured? I've read that it's divided into sort of like chapters, right?
It is. Yeah. There are 6 main chapters and then there's an epilogue. And, you know, I don't think it was designed to have chapters, but he found really good places to put breaks in the action, which means that you absolutely can do it in a 4-hour sit if you want to. I imagine many fans are going to. You can also use those chapter stops as a way to almost break it up if you want to do it over the course of a couple of evenings. But it's really, it's like as if you got a fast food meal the first time through, but this time you're getting the full, five course entree and dessert. I mean, it's kind of, you understand that it's following the same sort of beats of the 2017 cut, but it's just at 4 hours, it's allowed to breathe and grow and evolve in ways that are so organic to the way that the story is supposed to be told. And that's why I keep going back to revisit it, is that, there's just moments that I want to live in again, and I want to sort of revisit. And I think it's such a tremendous, tremendous adaptation of all the DC characters and all the heroes that are part of the Justice League.
I love it. Well, go into some of your favorite moments, and I know we got to walk a line without of no spoilers, but what are, I guess let me put, I'll put it this way, spoiler free. What do you think are like the biggest strengths of this 4 hour version versus what we saw back in 2017 Justice League? I mean, obviously from a tone standpoint, like you're saying, it's the more like 300, if anyone's seen 300, we know the Snyder style. So what are the strengths tonally and also story-wise?
Yeah, I can do this without spoilers, because it just treats the heroes and the characters with the respect that I think that they deserve. And that 2017 did not do that. It actually watered down significantly the way that the Justice League should be portrayed. You can't squeeze the Justice League heroes into the Marvel model. They're different. They're just different, and they should be different. And so Joss Whedon, I don't think, the guy who directed the theatrical cut in 2017, I don't think he actually truly understood who the Justice League characters are. They made Batman, sarcastic and funny, and he's not a funny hero. He's a tragic hero. They made Flash a coward, and they completely ripped away the backstory for Cyborg, the character played by Ray Fisher. So what this movie does is it really just restores the legacy and the honor of the characters. It fleshes out their backstories. It gives them actual character motivations. There's, little character beats that are part of the development of the story that have you saying like, yeah, that's the character I grew up on. That's the hero that I know. And so my favorite parts were just the ones that involved the heroes that we hadn't yet seen on the big screen before. A lot more with Flash, which I think is fantastic. A great, great exploration of who Cyborg is, and some really cool stuff with both Wonder Woman and Aquaman that are good counterparts to the solo movies that we got from both of those characters later on down the line.
Great stuff. Great explanation, man, of the characters. And do we, I remember Steppenwolf was the villain in the theatrical version. Is he still the baddie, or is, I remember there was a lot of talk of where's Darkseid and all that kind of stuff. But so I don't, is it, are you able to answer that without a spoiler though?
I can, sure, for sure, because he's been part of the marketing for it, for sure. Like it is still Steppenwolf largely, and they do a lot more to connect Steppenwolf back to his native planet, which is this place called Apocalypse that's ruled over by Darkseid. And, if you're a casual comic book fan and you've kept up with the Marvel movies, you might look at Darkseid and say like, oh, that's just Thanos, but for the DC universe. They are similar but completely different. And I will say, if you're a DC fanatic, you get a lot more Darkseid in this movie than I anticipated. And I'll stop there, but I'll just say like, I kind of thought going into it that it would be like a cameo at the end of the movie, where it'd be like, oh, that's a tease for what's to come. But it's not. There's a lot more in there. And that comes with Zach giving you the kitchen sink version.
I love it. So obviously, to your point, you're talking, you've mentioned multiple times, and it's really smart that that you can't shoehorn DC into a Marvel universe, that they're almost two separate entities, tonally, characters, the whole shebang. And I think you're entirely correct on that. I guess to devil's advocate, do you think, I'm not even talking tone at this point, in terms of the rollout, how Marvel had a Cap movie, they had an Iron Man movie, they had a Thor movie, they had a Hulk movie, and then they brought them assembled to the Avengers as the great team up. Do you think DC missed an opportunity by not rolling out the movies that way, having a Flash standalone, Aquaman, and then Justice League? Or do you think it really doesn't matter? For instance, Black Panther appeared in a team up movie before his origin story. You know what I mean? Like, where do you fall sort of in that camp of the rollout?
Yeah, no, I mean, in hindsight, it's really easy to go back and sort of judge all this. And I do think that at the time, Warner Brothers and DC were racing too quickly to catch up with the shared universe model that Marvel was enjoying currently. And they sort of pushed if you look at Batman versus Superman, like that's supposed to be a traditional Superman sequel. But Superman almost gets sidelined in his own sequel to the point where like they have to dedicate a lot of time to Batman. They have to introduce Wonder Woman. They do tease the presence of the other metahumans, meaning Aquaman, Flash, and Cyborg. You get Lex Luthor as a villain. You get Doomsday as a villain. Like it's a lot of stuff for one movie. And it's DC sort of trying to pack the deck, you know, as quickly as they can. So yeah, in hindsight, I think they would have been smarter to almost roll out these characters in individual movies and take their time to develop the universe and build up to where they are. But what I will say now is that at the 4-hour version, this Justice League movie does a fantastic job of establishing for casual audiences who these other heroes are. And you know, you do get a strong sense of Flash and his world. You do get a strong sense of Cyborg. So if this was meant to be the springboard back in 2017 that catapulted these heroes into their own stories, it worked so much better that way. I always sort of faulted Warner Brothers for being too reactionary to wanting to chase the Marvel model. And you know, Marvel kind of proves that it's really hard to do that. You know, it's, you can't just throw together a cinematic universe and, you know, Marvel's kind of the exception to the rule. So I wish that Warner Brothers and DC were just a little bit more patient and let Snyder have his vision play out. But, you know, they weren't doing quite as well at the box office that Marvel was doing. They wanted to catch up quickly and they pivoted and it ended up costing them in the long run.
Yeah, I think those pivots are what's tricky. It's like, it's similar with like the Star Wars, you know, like it's, let's pick a filmmaker and see his vision through to the end rather than, you know, constantly jumping in and tinkering and shifting tones back and forth and swapping out directors. And you know what I mean? Let's bring JJ Abrams back for the final Star. You know, it's sort of that's where you get in trouble. And so I agree with you. I wish studios would just, in this case, Warner Brothers, let's pick Snyder. Let's see his vision to the end. Maybe non-Snyder fans won't appreciate it, but at least there'll be a whole legion of Snyder fans that will thank you for letting him, you know, we got to see the vision play out. So, cool. Well, where does it go from here? I mean, you alluded to it earlier, and I sort of agree. Like, do you think that this Snyder Cut version should they throw out the old Whedon stuff and make this new 4-hour version? Like, you know, should we embrace this as the canon and move forward based off of this in other sequels?
We should never, ever speak of the Whedon version ever again. I don't know how you can strike it from the record of pop culture, but that needs to happen immediately. Where does it go from here? It's, you know, that is a fascinating question. And I don't even want to sort of hazard a guess because, you know, Zach is trying to do everything in his power to treat this like the one-off opportunity, you know, to finish his vision that he is getting, and he never thought he'd get a chance to do it. And he's thrilled to be able to do it. But, you know, from a business perspective, I know it'd be ridiculous for HBO Max if this does extremely well to not turn around and say to Zack Snyder, what else do you have? You know, what else can we do? But logistically, that's really hard to do because, you know, mounting a Justice League sequel is technically complicated and it requires a lot. But I do know that these streaming services really do want to invest in original programming. And what better thing to invest in than Zack Snyder's adaptation of the DC characters? So it's going to be really fascinating to see how this plays out over the next, you know, month or two. But the thing is, we don't see the numbers from the streaming services. We never really know how well things do. We have to take their word for it. So if HBO Max comes out and says that it extremely overperformed, then we may get a glimmer of hope for Restore the Snyderverse. But we'll see. We'll see how it plays out.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm fascinated to follow it. All right, cool. Well, on a personal note, before we run, you know, how exciting has this been for you? I know you got to interview Snyder the other day, and for, you know, a comic book, self-professed comic book geek like yourself, I mean, you get to geek out with the man himself. And then also, you know, tying into that, now you have the official book on the subject of the release of the Snyder Cut. So for you, I mean, talk on a personal note, how exciting this whole ride's been for you.
I mean, it's unlike anything I could even describe, man. I could try, but it really blows my mind that this book that I started 2 years ago about a movie that nobody thought we would ever get a chance to see, is now, you know, is out in stores and arrived 17 days before the actual movie is getting released. Like, if I ever stop and just think about how impossible that timing is, it melts my face. So I'm just strapped in and enjoying the ride as much as I can. And I really do hope that a lot of people come away from the movie and ask themselves, like, boy, what happened here? You know, what went wrong with that 2017 movie? And how come it took so long to get this version out there? Because that's the story I sat down to tell. And, you know, I'm really proud of the book. And I hope a lot of fans dig it and check it out. But it's been a crazy, crazy wild ride in the best way possible.
Right. When you sat down, to your point, when you sat down to write it, it was almost like you were writing this thing about a hashtag, but the movie, you didn't even know the movie would come out. And now you've been basically writing your book in parallel while watching the trades in the news that this thing's a reality. That's gotta be wild. So,
which is, by the way, that's a terrible way to write a book. Don't ever write a book about a breaking news story, because it's constantly shifting and evolving, and print deadlines are cruel.
Right. Exactly. How can people pick up the book?
It's available everywhere books are sold. Amazon's the easiest way to get it, obviously. You can go to Barnes & Noble, Books a Million. I like to send people to bookshop.org. It'll find a local and independently owned bookstore in your market. And if they are not carrying it, they can order it for you that way, and the shop benefits. But yeah, it's readily available. It's a Kindle version. And then I have an audiobook version coming on April 27th that is read by George Newbern, who's the voice of Superman in the DC animated comics world. So I'm thrilled to have him on board as a collaborator.
Sweet. And then also a forward promotion. You're also planning another book, right, on Spider-Man?
I am. I'm deep in the weeds of the research process of telling Spider-Man's story, his run through Hollywood during what I think right now we're in this golden age of comic book movies, and it's never been better for adaptations of both DC and Marvel. And I think Spider-Man's been the most powerful, influential character during this time for so many different reasons. So I'm documenting his run through Hollywood, and I'm logging interviews with all the people who've been responsible for Spider-Man movies over the years. And it's been a ton of fun. It's been a real blast. I kind of, if I don't have a book to be working on now at this point, I kind of get an itch. And so hopefully this is the start of a whole new career. We'll see.
Right. And it's called With Great Power. So check out that. That'll be coming down the pipeline. But first, get the Release the Snyder Cut book. And before we run, if you want, plug your podcast, The Cinema Blend. It's got one of our DC critics, and I know you're in North Carolina and another guy in Chicago. Explain how that sort of Triforce works.
Sure. Thanks, Jason. I appreciate it. So it's called The Real Blend Podcast. It's R-E-E-L. We are a film-driven podcast that started as kind of an awards conversation. It's myself, Kevin McCarthy, who's on Fox 5 here in Washington, D.C., and then Jake Hamilton, who is a reporter for Fox 32 in Chicago. And the three of us have just been really close friends over the years, and we're all three of us are movie geeks, and so we figured we'd launch a podcast, because why not? Everyone else has. But what has really helped Real Blend stand out is that we've become a place where directors like to come and hang out and talk, because a lot of us do these press junkets. We get 4 minutes, you know, with the talent, and it's not enough time to really sit and break down the process of movie making. And so when a director comes on to the podcast, they can do 20 to 30 minutes and really take deep dives into their process and their films. And so we've had some tremendous guests. Christopher Nolan has come on, Quentin Tarantino, Rian Johnson. We're going to get Zack Snyder this week to talk about the Snyder Cut. So I'm really proud of the fact that we've become this you know, sort of stopping point for directors who want to get into deeper dives into their filmmaking and the craft. And so we've developed a pretty cool audience based on that.
Awesome. Final question, because I know you're going to have Snyder on your podcast coming up, but you already spoke with him once, you know, for your own purposes. So last question, what was the coolest takeaway from actually getting to interview your hero? Was there something he said or did that gave you goosebumps, that made you turn around and look at your comic book posters in your room and say, damn, I made it?
Oh, 100%. He told me that, you know, he thanked me for starting to write the book when I did. This was kind of off record. Because he said, I know when you started writing this, and when you started, there was no chance that the movie was coming. So it was truly like a leap of faith on your part, you know, that this was still an interesting story to tell. And he goes, I can't believe, you know, where we're both at now, where you're putting the finishing touches on this book and I'm putting the finishing touches on the movie. and they're both going to come out there. And that, I got goosebumps even just talking about that right now, because, you know, neither of us knew this was going to happen. And it's a thrill that they're both happening at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, man, you're this whole thing, your whole push, your whole book, you're a part of comic book history now. Like you, and of course Snyder being forced first and foremost, but folks like yourself, you might have saved the legacy of Superman and Batman that might have been tarnished for years to come if the regular Justice League cut was had left to stand. It might have been hard to recover from that. And eventually they would, you know, Batman's come back a million times, same as Superman. But in a way, sir, you've sort of helped save those Caped Crusaders. So that's gotta feel special.
Well, that's insanity. I was just here to tell their story. People have given me credit for really helping to push the movement along. I hope that I've raised the awareness to the work that they have done. They've done an incredible job for suicide prevention as well, too, raising money for charities that are really important to the Snyders. And they made sure that their voices were heard at a studio level, and that happens so infrequently. And so I'm proud of all they've accomplished.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate the time and we'll let you run. But thanks so much, man. Again, Sean O'Connell, he's the author of Release the Snyder Cut book. You can available now. And of course, it's timed with this Thursday's release of the new Snyder Cut of Justice League on HBO Max. So everybody check it out. 4-hour cut, and Sean will probably have seen it 10 times by then. All
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate your time.
right, man. Talk to you later.